Hare Krishna. This evening we are concluding our Srinavadvipa Mayapur segment of the 2012 Yatra. Tomorrow early morning we will go to Ekachakra Gram. In the house of Srivas, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was fulfilling all of his devotees' desires. Yesterday, His Holiness Sripad Jaipathak Swami Maharaj was singing this prayer by Lochandas Thakur that we have just sung today. Parama Karuna Pahundui Jana Nithai Goda Chandra Sabha Avatara Sara Siromani Kevala Ananda Kanda. These two brothers, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, are Karuna, supremely kind, merciful to all living beings. They are the sum total and the essence of all avatars. And how rare, when Ramchandra appeared, he was Ramchandra. When Varahadeva appeared in this world, he was Lord Sukara, Varaha. Vamanadeva was Vamanadeva. Krishna was Krishna. He performed most incredible, sweet, loving pastimes. And when it came time for him to liberate the asuras, such unbelievable things that he revealed to the world of his opulences. But still, he was always Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Radha Bhava Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. He's Krishna who comes with the heart of love and the complexion of Sri Radha to share her love with the whole world. But as the sum total of all avatars, the essence of all avatars, the unique feature of Lord Chaitanya is he invited devotees of so many different avatars to come and join him. And he revealed at different times in his Leela so many different aspects of himself. Here in Navadvipa, when he preached to his mother, at one time he revealed his incarnation of Kapila Dev. When he was on that pile of pots that were all dirty, he manifested his incarnation of Dattatreya. To Murari Gupta, he revealed his form of Varahadev in the courtyard just not far from here. To Kulavecha Sridhar in Sakyaras, he reveals himself as Krishna Balaramji. To Ramananda Rai, he revealed himself as Krishna and Sri Radha. We heard yesterday for Murari Gupta, who was an incarnation of Hanuman, the Lord revealed his supreme form as Sri Ramchandra, along with Lakshman and Sita. During the Mahaprakash Lila, the 21 hours of transcendental ecstasy in the house of his dear devotee Srivas. The Lord manifested himself to reciprocate with the most intimate love, moods of love, with each and every one of his particular devotees. He had just fulfilled the desires of Ganga Das Pandit, Srivas Thakur, Kolabecha Sridhar, Murari Gupta. Then he called for Haridas Thakur. Haridas, look. Haridas looked, and he saw the supreme opulence of Krishna standing before him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke to Haridas that, Haridas, your body is better than mine. I come near you, I touch you to purify myself. And the family of your birth is not only my family of birth, it is better than my family of birth. Very interesting. Lord Chaitanya, his grandparents Upendra Mishra and Nilambar Chakravarti were very, very highly respected, the most honored caste of Brahmins. Haridas Thakur was by the social system from a family of untouchables. And everywhere Haridas Thakur would go, although he exhibited the characteristics of the greatest saint, the humility of the dearest devotee of the Lord, he honored, respected, and loved everyone. Haridas Thakur could not see fault in anyone. It was beyond his capacity. Yet simply because of the birth he took, he was persecuted. People tried to destroy his reputation in every possible way. He was arrested. People tried to murder him. And even so-called nonviolent Brahmins would insult him. And we find everywhere he went, that's what was coming to meet him. But yet Haridas Thakur remained the same loving devotee in all circumstances. That's why he is Nam Acharya. By his example, he's teaching us what it means to be truly a devotee. He took shelter of the holy name in every situation. And no matter what anyone did or said to him, no one could provoke him to even dislike them in return. That is Thakur Haridas. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what a powerful statement he's making. Your birth is better than mine. Your body is worshipable, and I want to be purified by the touch of it. Then Lord Chaitanya reminded Haridas Thakur of an incident that took place many years before. During Yatra, you all went to Shantipur, and you went to Fuliagram. In Shantipur, Haridas Thakur met with the Dvaitacharya. Dvaitacharya arranged a cave for him to live in Shantipur. very interesting. Hospitality is not simply a stereotyped, you know, okay, you come, you get this, you come, you... Real hospitality is you really care about the person. And you go out of your way to, according to the individual, not what makes me happy to give you, but what I can give you to make you happy. All over the world, especially in India, oftentimes hospitality is, you know, you're coming to my house so that I can give you what I want to give you. Whether you like it or not, you take it. If this will get you sick, no problem, it makes me happy. Yeah, that's the way. Yes, this may make you sick, but it's not a problem because it makes me happy and you're my guest. Well, Haridas Thakur liked to live in caves. So Advaita Acharya went out and found a nice cave for him. And while he was there, he was chanting 300,000 names of Krishna every single day. He had just been in Bainapal, where Ramchandra Khan tried to destroy him. Then he went to Chandpur, where Gopal Chakravarti tried to destroy him. Then finally he came to Fuliagram, and the people of his same caste, they wanted to destroy him. They were ruling. The Muslims couldn't tolerate that someone from their birth was chanting the names of Krishna. He must be destroyed. And the Hindu Brahmins couldn't tolerate that a person of a Malecha family was chanting the names of Krishna. He must be destroyed. So they went to the king. The Qazi went to the king. Said he must be arrested, he must be punished and killed. So the arrest warrant was made. Haridas Thakur, he heard about it. They didn't have to find him. He just came right to where the king was. Came right into the prison house.
Hare Krishna. The last day of the yatra. The personality of the sound system is expressing its time to go.
So all the prisoners were looking at Haridas thinking, oh, he's such a saint. By his blessing, we will be freed from jail. You see, these prisoners were mostly very pious people who were put in prison because they were practicing their faith. So Haridas comes in and looks at them. They were helpless. They were desperate. With folded palms, they were looking upon Haridas Thakur with such dependent hearts, begging and praying for his blessings, for his mercy, because he was such a great Vaishnav, and because Krishna was manifesting so much in his heart. When they were looking upon him, they could actually feel Krishna, because they were so receptive. When you open your heart to a great Vaishnav, you're opening your heart to Krishna. And they begged for a blessing. And Haridas said, oh, I bless you that you will always remain just like you are. They didn't say anything, but they looked really disappointed. And he said, why are you disappointed? I give you a very good blessing. What are you now? Right now, with an open, humble heart and folded palms, you are coming to a representative of God and praying for mercy. May you always be like that. Because in this mood, you will always get Krishna. It's not that I'm telling you should stay in jail. In fact, it's a detail, but very soon, in a few days, you'll be released from jail. But when you're released from jail, understand this whole world is a prison house. And the way out is the way you are now, humbling yourself before God. So in every situation, never forget Krishna. In every situation, don't forget the holy names of the Lord. So they were very happy. And then he went in to see the king. And the king looked at him. He was so beautiful. He emanated such kindness. He had a composure of such love and confidence. He was totally fearless. The king said, "Sir, you're one of us. Why are you behaving like these fools and ignorant Hindu people? Don't you know that you're corrupting our own religion and you're corrupting their religion and everyone's complaining about you? And if you don't stop this, you're going to have to be destroyed." Haridas Thakur, right in front of the king, he laughed. "Ha ha! Just see the illusory power of Lord Vishnu. How much illusion you people are in! There is one God who is the absolute creator, destroyer, maintainer of everyone that exists. He is the ultimate father and mother of all living beings. He is eternal. He is imperishable. He is infinite in every way. And he's the divine person. And he goes by many names. In the Quran, he is called Koda. In the Puranas, he is Ram or Krishna or Vishnu. He has many names, but he's the same one supreme person, and we are all his children. My heart is irresistibly being attracted by that one supreme being to his form of Krishna. I cannot help but chanting the names of Krishna." They were getting very angry. They said, "If you just stay to yourself and don't contaminate anybody else, we will let you live. Otherwise, you must die." Haridas Thakur said, "To give up my body is inevitable in due course of time. But to give up showing compassion to other living beings is impossible. This is the characteristic of one who loves Krishna." He didn't say that, but that is his characteristic. And then Haridas Thakur said, "If you chop this body into so many little pieces, every piece with compassion and love will be chanting Krishna's holy names. The king said, "I gave you your chance." Then he turned to the Qazi and said, "What should I do with this animal?" The Qazi, ferocious, he said, "Beat him till he's dead through the 22 marketplaces of the town." Torture. The king called executioners and said, "Torture him and beat him till no life survives in his body." They dragged him by the hair, and it was a public display to warn other people not to come anywhere close to somebody like this, what to speak of be it. They beat him and beat him and beat him to the 22 marketplaces. Throughout the entire day, people tried to stop him, but if anybody tried to stop the executioners threatened them and they ran away. Finally, after all 22 marketplaces, the executioners were totally exhausted. They couldn't even lift their arms. They were beating him with sticks and whips. They were pulling him, kicking him, blaspheming him. They said, Haridas, why don't you die? No one in the history of our legal system has ever survived more than 3 marketplaces. You're still alive after 22 marketplaces, and you don't even look like you're in pain. Sometimes you're smiling. The only time you ever look like you're in pain is when you look at us and you look like you're feeling so sorry and pitiful toward us, and we're trying to kill you. What are we going to do? They're going to be so mad up there in the palace that they're going to kill us because we didn't kill you. Haridas said, oh, if my life is a problem for you, just see what I will do. And he chanted the name of Krishna. He was chanting the names of Krishna constantly. No matter how much they beat him, he just kept chanting more and more and more feelingly. Kirtaniya Siddhahari. They couldn't stop him from chanting. And every time he tasted Krishna, he was transcendental to this world. They could not budge him from his integrity of being compassionate to all living beings. So he chanted the name of Krishna one more time, and all the life symptoms of his body left. No pulse, no breath, no heartbeat. They went to pick him up, but he was so heavy they couldn't lift him. Then they tried again, and he was so light they lifted him. And they brought him to the king and threw him at the king's door and said, he's dead. We did our work. King said, bury him. Kazi said, no, no bury for him. If he's burying, that's auspicious. So they went to the Brahmins, the smarta Brahmins. Here, he's one of you. Burn him. They said, no, he's untouchable. We cannot burn him. Well, what do we do with him? Throw him in the river like a piece of trash. So they threw his body in the Ganga. And he floated downstream. And then, Hare Krishna. He wasn't dead. He was in samadhi. But in that state of samadhi, it appeared he was dead. He rose from the dead. And he crawled out from the bank of the Ganga. Now, for most of us, after that whole ordeal of being beaten for about 12 hours constantly by massive, strong executioners, he probably would have, you know, just quietly gone back to his cave or something, or found, you know, a secret cave. He walked right back into the town, right to the palace of the king. And when the king saw him, the king actually bowed at his feet and said, Haridas, you are a saint. Do whatever you want, but please forgive me. That's Haridas. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Srivas's house, he was reminding Thakur Haridas of this incident. He said, do you remember when those executioners were beating you with sticks, whipping you with whips, kicking you with their feet? Do you remember that? There is no way a human being could possibly survive. They were inflicting so much pain with so much hatred that from the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, because you were crying out my names with so much feeling, I descended from Vaikuntha in an invisible form with my Sudarshan chakra to punish them. But as you were chanting from the core of your heart with such genuine feeling, you were praying, My Lord, please forgive them. Please give them your mercy. Don't punish them because of me. Haridas, Lord Chaitanya said, you not even for a slightest moment found fault in them. You only saw good in them. You loved them. You were willing to suffer and die rather than have them get any of the reactions of their karma. Because your prayers of compassion were so genuine, he said, my Sudarshan Chakra was powerless. My anger against them was conquered by your love for them. So I couldn't hurt them because I knew that would hurt you. So all I could do is put down my chakra and lay my invisible body over yours to take all the beatings myself. Because of your love and your compassion, Haridas, I did that. Just see. And then Lord Chaitanya opened his jhadar and revealed all those brutal whipping and sticking and beating marks on his own beautiful body. Haridas Thakur fell unconscious. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, please rise, Haridas. Gaze at my opulence. Haridas Thakur saw this beautiful form of Krishna and wept incessantly. And then he offered his prayers. He said, my Lord, I am the most sinful person. If someone sees me, what to speak of, touch me, they should go to the Ganga immediately and take their baths. I have no good qualifications. But still, by your causeless mercy, you allow me to chant your name. You allow me to remember you. In fact, my Lord, you never abandon those who remember you. But I'm so unfortunate that I never remember you. He said, Draupadi, she was a princess of the Pandus. She was dragged by Dushasana on the order of Duryodhana to be humiliated and stripped naked in a public assembly. A fate for her that would be worse than death. Dushasana was like a roaring lion. And in comparison, Draupadi was like a little mouse. He looked at her with such evil, evil glances and went to pull her cloth. She turned to the Pandavas. They were helpless. They looked at the ground in shame. She turned to Bhishma and Drona. They looked to the ground in total humiliation. She looked toward Dhritarashtra and she cried out, you are all cowards. You all have no character. How could you allow this injustice to take place? But still, everyone was looking down. No one was willing to help. And then Dushasana took her cloth and pulled. She tried to pull with her own little hands, but she was no match to him. When she was in a state of total helplessness, with a heart full of pure humility, she raised her arms in the air in the spirit of Sharanagati, of surrender, and cried out, "Hey Krishna, hey Govinda." And in this spirit, Haridas said, she remembered you. And you manifested as her sari. And because you are unlimited, her sari was unlimited. Dushasana pulled and pulled and pulled and pulled, and she was spinning like a top as he was pulling and pulling and pulling until the room was filled with material of cloth. And ultimately, Dushasana fell to the ground exhausted. And Draupadi was still dressed. Krishna was embracing her. This is the power of remembering you. And there was that time when the goddess Parvati was surrounded by witches who intended to eat her. And she remembered you. And you appeared and saved her from all of the dangers. Little Prahlad, 5-year-old child, and his father was the ruler of the universe, Hiranyakashipu. He and his most powerful armies were bent on killing little Prahlad. They threw him in poisonous snake pits. They threw him in fire. They threw him under water, tied with massive stones. They fed him deadly poison. But because little Prahlad remembered you, you never abandon your devotee. You are always, always there for him. And the Pandavas. My lord, when Yudhisthira was living in Kamyavan, Duryodhana sent Durvas Muni with 60,000 disciples to take prasad. Duryodhana knew that Draupadi had the akshapatra. She had a pot that would feed as many people as came to eat until she ate. After she ate, it became just like a regular old pot. Like in the kitchen back there, we have these akshapatras. Seems that way. Until after everyone eats, then they just become regular old pots. Duryodhana knew what time Draupadi would eat and said, "Durvas, if you want really good prasad, go to Yudhisthira and Kamyavan, go at this time. That's the best time to go. You get the best prasad at that time." So Durvas came. Well, he said, "I'm hungry and all these followers of mine are really hungry. Give me some food." And Yudhisthira said, Draupadi, get your pot, get your pot." She said, "I already ate. It's too late." They didn't know what to do. Because Durvas Muni, when he gets angry, he curses. And he's an Amsa of Shiva. You don't want to be cursed by him. So they didn't know what to do. Durvas Muni said, "I will be taking my bath in the Yamuna. When I come back, we will expect prasad." So while he was in the Yamuna, Draupadi, Haridas Thakur, said, "She remembered you, my lord. And you appeared at their doorstep." Yudhisthira Maharaj opened the door. "Krishna's there. Krishna. He came to the forest of Kamyavan." Krishna said, "I'm hungry." Yudhisthira Maharaj, "Oh, first we're going to get cursed by Durvas Muni because we have nothing to give him. And now Krishna comes to our house, he's hungry, we have nothing to give him. Krishna, we have nothing, we're helpless." Draupadi was remembering. Krishna said, "Well, is there anything in the pot?" He said, "No, nothing's left in the pot."
He said, bring the pot.
Krishna went to the pot. It was already washed. But somehow or other, by yoga maya, a little particle of sabji, tiny, 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 tiny little particle of sabji was stuck to the pot. Krishna, he ate it. He said, I am completely satisfied.
And when I am satisfied, the whole universe is satisfied.
And meanwhile, Durvasa Muni and all of his 60,000 sadhus. And we were speaking the other day about how much sadhus can eat. All of a sudden, it was as if they just overate by 10 times. It was like a huge Govardhan Puja feast or something. They were bloating, like, they were so filled with food. And they hadn't eaten anything. And then they were all looking at each other like, you know, Bhima has his club, and if Draupadi cooks this massive feast for us, and we go to the house and we don't eat anything, then we're going to make an offense to the Pandavas, and who knows what Bhima will do if we offend his wife like this. So what should we do? And they were thinking, what do we do? What do we do? Durvasa Muni was even thinking, I can't eat anything else. I can't even drink a drop of water after this. And then Krishna, the Pandavas didn't know what was happening. The Pandavas were still thinking that they're going to get cursed. Krishna told Bhima, go and tell Durvasa and all of his disciples, prasad is ready. What? There's nothing here. He said, no, no, go, tell him. Tell him immediately. And bring your club with you. So he was, this is blind following from a material perspective. He said, all right. He took his club and he went and said, Durvas, Durvas, all of your disciples come. Draupadi has prepared prasad. It's waiting for you. And yet he didn't know why he was saying it. And Durvasa Muni and he said, Bhima, you go home, we'll be there in a few minutes. So Bhima said, all right. And as soon as Bhima turned his back, these were mystic yogis. With all their mystic powers, they got out of there as fast as they could, so there was not a single sign that they were ever even there. Haridas Thakur was saying, this is the power of remembering you. But I'm so unfortunate that I can hardly remember you. Achamil was the son of a very saintly Brahmin. But due to the association with a very, very, very lusty situation, he lost all of his good character. In that association of somebody addicted to the senses and the mind, he became, just to support, he became sinful, criminal. There was nothing he wouldn't do. And when he was old, on his deathbed, as he was dying, the Yamadutas came for him. And when he saw them, he thought of his little son, whose name was Narayan. And he called out the name Narayan. And Haridas said, when he called the name of Narayan, he remembered you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Vishnu Dutas came and liberated Achamil. And ultimately he attained the supreme perfection of life. This is the power of remembering you. But please, my Lord, please do not reject me, even though I hardly can even remember you. Now, what is Haridas saying? He's not just talking things that he doesn't mean. This is his humility. When a person is truly a great devotee and understands the unlimited beauty, sweetness, and greatness of Krishna, then we realize how small we are. And in that humility, we give ourselves completely to Krishna. And in giving ourselves completely to Krishna, Krishna gives himself completely to us. The simplest and most powerful of all ways of remembering Krishna is to understand that Krishna is not different than his name. With all his potencies, with all his beauty and grace, Kirtaniya Sadahari. Therefore, the perfection of life is to always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna by crying out the names of Krishna. Lord Chaitanya told Haridas, ask for any boon. I want to give you whatever is in your heart. He could have asked for liberation. He could have asked for elevation to the upper planets. He could have asked for elevation to Vaikuntha, to Goloka. He could have asked for anything and gotten it immediately. But what is the sweetness of Haridas's mood? He asked the Lord, the only boon I crave for is give me the blessing of the remnants of the food that have been left from the plate of those devotees who love you. In every or any birth that I may take, bless me that I could eat the food that has fallen from the mouth of your devotee. Let that blessing be mine. And then Haridas became very embarrassed. He said, I am so shameless. In my condition, who I am asking for something so exalted. I don't deserve it. How could I even ask for something like this? But this is my defect. So much I crave to be seen as an important person. Although I am so lonely, so lowly. He said, my dear Lord, just let me be a dog near the house of your devotee. Mayapur is wonderful. The spiritual world. Who knows who that dog is? Maybe Haridas Thakur, who came to give us his association. Haridas again and again was begging Lord for Chaitanya. Just the only thing I ask is let me be the most humble servant of the servant of the servant of your servants. He had such feeling and such sincerity that Lord Chaitanya cried. He said, Haridas, anyone who sees you, anyone who talks to you, anyone who even remembers you, I will give them Krishna consciousness. I will give them all the blessings of Krishna. Haridas, you are my master, I am your servant. Because of the quality of your humility and love, I am forever a prisoner in your heart. Nobody in this world wants to be a prisoner. We all like freedom. But Krishna longs to be the prisoner in the heart of a devotee who loves him. And he proclaimed this to the entire world. And then Lord Chaitanya said, Haridas, I give you this gift that you will always be dear to me and you will always be most dear to all my devotees and you will forever inspire us by chanting with love and devotion my holy name. When the devotees saw this exchange of affection between Lord Gauranga and Thakur Haridas, they cried out, Jai, Jai.
Jai, Jai.
Has Srila Jaipatak Maharaj come yet? Okay. I'm just keeping you here until he comes. In this incident, the Lord revealed to the world how the crest jewel of all gifts, pure devotional service, is not given on the basis of any material consideration. This grace comes upon us simply according to our sincerity. It's not a question of our caste or our sex or our nationality or our education or our income. It's not even a matter of how we dress. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he saw in Vrindavan some pujaris offering puja. And he said that they are offering puja simply to get money, to smoke bidis. So they're with the Lord all day long. But if they're doing it for pratishta, for fame, for profit, for prestige, are they really worshiping the Lord? The Lord's there, but they're worshiping their egos. Dukhi, who became Sukhi, she attained what even the greatest pujaris and the greatest pundits couldn't get, just by carrying some pots. Vrindavan Das Thakur tells, Prahlad was born in a family of demons. Gajendra was born in a family of animals. Hanuman was born in a family of monkeys. But yet, they were the dearmost loving servants of the Lord because of their devotion, because they remembered the Lord with love. Then Lord Chaitanya turned to Advaita Acharya and said, Advaita, do you remember? For so many years you have been teaching the Bhagavad Gita. You teach all the different Vedas, and every single verse you specifically explain in the context that its essence is pure, undivided, loving devotion to Krishna. And if any verse of the scripture, if you could not truly, transparently understand how this means pure devotion to Krishna, you wouldn't blame the verse. You would feel so bad that you would fast. You would fast until the revelation came. Do you remember that, Advaita? Sometimes when you were giving lectures from the Gita and you came to a certain verse and you couldn't, you see, it's not something superficial. We can read it and just kind of explain it through word jugglery. But he had to really, really have the realization and conviction to speak it. That was Advaita. So he would fast. He would go to sleep at night. He said, do you remember every time that happened, I would personally appear to you in your dream and explain to you how that verse means pure unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord. The one Supreme Lord of all beings, who has many names, many forms. But one time, I told you, Advaita, just get up and eat. I'll tell you later what the meaning of this verse is. Today I will tell you. Now this happened probably 20 years before. He said, the verse means, everywhere are my hands and legs, my eyes and faces. In this way, the super soul exists. And he revealed to Advaitacharya the concept of achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva, unity in diversity. How the Supreme Lord, the Absolute Truth, is simultaneously the all-pervading and still personal, having personal exchanges with each and every one of us. He said, Advaita, ask for any boon. Advaitacharya said, my Lord, that which I prayed for, that which I longed for, that which I fasted for, you have already given me. You descended into this world to deliver the world through the Harinam Sankirtan movement. Please give your mercy and give love of Krishna even to the least qualified people. Then the Lord was giving his blessings to everyone. He said, everyone was coming, he was offering boons. Somebody said, my father doesn't allow me to come to be with the devotees. Please change his heart and make him favorable. The Lord. Some were praying for the welfare of their sons, their disciples, their wives, their husbands, whoever. And the Lord was fulfilling everyone's desire. And everyone was seeing Krishna, seeing the Lord just as they loved him. Except one person, Mukunda. That same Mukunda Dutt, the brother of Basudev Dutt from Chattagram in East Bengal, he had been living in Navadweep for so many years. His kirtans were so sweet that the devotees' hearts would melt when they would hear him sing. He was such an ocean of good qualities. But Lord Chaitanya would not look at Mukunda. He would not call him forward. In fact, he was utterly neglecting him. Mukunda felt so sad. What have I done? And he started to cry because he would not come before the Lord unless the Lord called him.
You see, you can't demand blessings. It comes through grace.
Srivas Thakur, he said, "My Lord, why are you neglecting Mukunda? You are fulfilling all of our inner desires. You're giving everyone such bliss. Why are you torturing Mukunda by not calling him? What has he done? If he's done something, then forgive him and let him come."
Lord Chaitanya said, "Never ask that question again. I never want to see that wretch's face." Mukunda could hear it all. He was just behind a curtain.
Srivas started to cry. All the devotees started to cry. This is the nature of Vaishnavas. Everyone in that room just saw Krishna and got all their blessings, all their boons fulfilled. Krishna intimately showed just the form of Krishna that they loved to each and every one of them. But none of them were happy. Because they loved Mukunda so much. If he's not happy, how could we be happy? This type of compassion is the highest happiness. To feel the pangs of another on a spiritual platform, that compassion is the highest happiness within this material existence, because it's not of material existence. It's what the Lord feels when he comes to this world. It's why he comes to this world.
Srivas said, "If he's made a mistake, then, you know, forgive him. Don't you know that Mukunda loves you? You always dance when he sings, and our hearts always melt when he sings. What has he done?"
And Lord Chaitanya said, "He is the type of person who keeps straw between his teeth and with all humility bows at your feet and then picks up an iron club and smashes you on the head with it. That is Mukunda."
He was talking about when Mukunda was very young, many years before, he had a teacher who was directly opposed to bhakti or devotional service. And influenced by his teacher, he was critical of the path of bhakti. And Mukunda, when he heard the Lord speak, he said, "Yes, that's what I was. I don't deserve to see the Lord." And then he was crying. And he said, "Will I ever see?" He said, "There's no reason for me to keep this body alive, but will I ever see the Lord?" And Srivas and all the devotees were weeping, weeping, and weeping. And they said, "My Lord, will you ever allow him to see you?" And Lord Chaitanya, in a thunderous roar, he said, "After 10 million births." When Mukunda heard that, he was splashed with ecstasy.
I will see the Lord. In only 10 million births, I will see. Tears of ecstatic joy, of celebration, poured from his eyes as he began to dance in a trance. "I will see the Lord! I will see the Lord! Only 10 million births, I will see the Lord!"
Lord Chaitanya saw this and he smiled. He said, "Bring Mukunda immediately." The devotees ran to Mukunda and said, "The Lord wants to see you now! He wants you to see him now! Come, come, come!" But he was in another world. He was dancing. "I will see, I will see, I will see, I will see. Mukunda, you can see now." He said, "I will see after 10 million births." "No, Mukunda, now, now," he's calling. "After only 10 million births, I will see, I will see." They had to actually pick him up.
and carry him and put him right in front of Lord Chaitanya.
And Lord Chaitanya smiled. He said, Mukunda, because of your faith in my words,
and because you had such value in loving me and seeing me, that even if it took 10 million births, you were happy.
He said, I have brought you before me at this moment.
He said, actually, because of your enthusiasm, any offenses you've ever committed have been wiped away. In fact, you never even made any offenses. Because of you, the nature of your love for me and your enthusiasm to serve me, even if you commit 10 million offenses, you will always see me. And I will always be with you.
Mukunda was so overwhelmed. He said, actually, you're saying I have so much faith. I wish I had faith. I'm like a pile of ashes. But still, I'm feeling so happy when I see you. Why? It's only by your mercy upon me. Duryodhana
would see you regularly. In fact, at one time, you manifested your Virat Rupa, your universal form, to Duryodhana. And he was looking at you, but he didn't feel any happiness upon seeing you. Rather, he was envious. He felt unhappy seeing you.
And Vidarbha, that great kingdom, when you came to kidnap Rukmini, her brother Rukma, and Jarasandha, and all those kings, they saw you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Dwarkatish.
But they didn't find any happiness. Rather, they suffered and ultimately lost everything. Hiranyaksha, he had the personal vision with his own eyes of Varahadev. In that form, every one of your limbs was the personification of all the yajñas. The very personification of all knowledge and all realization. Great yogis and mystics perform tapasya for hundreds of lifetimes for a glimpse of Varahadev. And Hiranyakashipu was seeing you constantly with his eyes, but he didn't find any happiness because he didn't have devotion. Duryodhana saw you, but no happiness because he didn't have devotion. Hiranyaksha's brother, Hiranyakashipu, saw the incredible divine form of Narasingadev, but he felt no happiness because he didn't have bhakti, devotion. At the same time, Kubja, she was just a hunchbacked lady. And the Yajñapati, Patnis, the Brahmins' wives, and the women of Mathura, and the garland makers, they didn't have any qualification. They never did any yajñas. But because they had devotion, when they saw you, they felt such happiness. And that happiness completely purified their hearts. At the same time, on the same day, Kamsa saw the same thing that Kubja saw. And all the women of Mathura. and that garland maker, they all attained the ultimate perfection of life by seeing you. And Kamsa saw you, and he felt miserable because they had devotion and he didn't. This is the power of devotion, bhakti. That power has empowered Anantashesha to speak the Vedas continuously without having to ever repeat anything twice. It's given Shiva the power to create all auspiciousness. It is devotion that has given Narada Muni the power to be the greatest of all sages. And Vyasadeva, he compiled all these Vedic literatures, the four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, but he wasn't happy until he exclusively glorified devotion in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he became completely happy. My Lord, I have no devotion, but still, I'm so happy to see you. That is your causeless mercy. That is your grace. I'm like a little worm, but still you allow me to see you, and you allow me to feel so happy when I see you. Lord Chaitanya wept. He said, Mukunda, whenever I incarnate, you will always be at my side, singing kirtans of the holy names. It is true that it is only through bhakti or devotion that people could appreciate who I am. He said, in Mathura, there was a washerman. He was the washerman of Kamsa. When Krishna entered Mathura, he was going from shop to shop. The garland maker, whose name was Sudama, he gave the best garland to Krishna with such love and devotion. And Krishna gave the garland maker the blessing that as long as you're living in this world, every desire you have will be fulfilled. You will never feel the pangs of material existence. And when you pass from this world, you will come directly to my abode for the perfection of liberation. He was giving these benedictions to everyone. All they had to do was just appreciate the opportunity to serve. And then Krishna went to the washerman. And he said, do you have a piece of cloth I could have? And the washerman said, Ma, who are you, you cowherd boy? I am the washerman for the king. You are asking for what belongs to the king. Out from here, you deserve to be punished. Lord Chaitanya, during Mahaprakash here in Navadvip, he told all the devotees through Mukunda, he said, that washerman, for hundreds and hundreds of births, he was a yogi, and he performed severe tapasya. In seclusion, he chanted mantras. He did breath controls. He did so many austerities of fasting, living in total simplicity, birth after birth, with the single aim of seeing me. And I granted him the fulfillment of it. And I came right to him, and he saw me face to face. But because he had no devotion, he wasn't happy. In fact, he was miserable. This is the power of bhakti. You see, when we have bhakti, we see things as they are. Bhagavad Gita as it is.
Krishna tells in Gita, when you have thus learned the truth, you will know that all living beings are in me, are of me, and are mine. When we have bhakti, we see premanjana churita bhakti vilochanena. We see through the lens of this devotion. We see the whole material creation as Krishna's playground, meant for Krishna's pleasure. We see every living being as Krishna's children. We don't want to exploit anyone because they're for Krishna. There can be no selfishness, there can be no envy when we see through the eyes of bhakti. There's complete satisfaction. There's complete happiness. Because we're seeing Krishna in everyone. We're seeing Krishna in everything. We're seeing Krishna everywhere. And this is not just some sort of a mystical conception. It means in every situation, our motivation is to serve Krishna and to please Krishna. That is bhakti. And when we see through that lens of bhakti how to serve, and that's what Srila Prabhupada has given us. That's what all the great acharyas were given us. The way, the means by which every aspect of our life we can see an opportunity to serve. We remember Krishna. Srila Prabhupada once said to his one disciple, asked him, how do we see you everywhere? How do we see Krishna everywhere? And Srila Prabhupada was sitting in his desk and he picked up his spectacles. He said, when you see these spectacles, what do you see? The devotee said, when I see these, I think these are my Gurudev, Srila Prabhupada's spectacles. He said, so you are seeing me in the spectacles. I said, yes. And what happens when you look? He said, I feel so much love and gratitude to you because I remember you. He said, Sarvaloka Maheshwaram, everything is the property of Krishna. Aham Bija Pratapita, everyone is the child of Krishna. Everything is Krishna's energy. Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo. And everything is ultimately meant for Krishna. So whether we see a microphone, whether we see a man or a woman, whether we see a person, whatever their color, whatever their caste, whatever their nature, whatever their religion, when we see the sky and we see a cloud, whether we see a dog or a jackal, or we hear a jackal, wherever we look, wherever we see, our enthusiasm is how I could serve. We see an opportunity to serve in every situation. This doesn't mean everything becomes one in that we become indifferent or hard-hearted. In all the variegatedness and differentiation, the oneness is in our love for Krishna. In our sincerity to serve Krishna. And this is where true happiness is. The only happiness for the soul, for the Atma, is to serve with love, to serve Krishna, and to connect others with that service, through that service. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was revealing this to Mukunda Dutt. And he said, Mukunda, I give you this blessing that whenever I descend to this world, you will personally be with me to sing. And I will give you the innermost wish of your desire that whenever you sing,
the holy names of the Lord, you will totally melt the hearts of anyone who hears you. The devotees, they cried out in such happiness to see the blessing coming upon Mukunda. Hari Bol. Then everyone was completely happy because no one was left out. And Vrindavan Das Thakur tells us that anyone who hears this narration with sincere faith will hear Mukunda Dutt singing. Will sing with Mukunda Dutt. And anyone who takes pleasure in hearing this narration will see Lord Chaitanya face to face. As the Mahaprakash Leela was continuing, there was a little four or five-year-old girl. I think she was 4 years old. Her name is Narayani. She was the niece of Srivas Thakur. And little four-year-old girl, she was just sitting. And Lord Chaitanya took his whole plate of prasad that they offered him, and he ate something, and he gave the plate. He said, Narayani, take the remnants of my prasad. Could you imagine? All these mahants, these avatars, these paramhamsas, these sages, these incredibly enlightened beings are filling the room, and he gives his plate of prasad to this little four-year-old girl, Narayani. And she ate it. And she was so happy. This was very moving. In fact, it's one of the most historical aspects of our tradition that Narayani was given this prasad by Lord Chaitanya. Such a fortune. And she was so grateful. And after she ate the prasad, Lord Chaitanya, right in front of everyone, he smiled and said, Narayani, chant the name of Krishna and cry in ecstasy. A little Narayani. She went, Krishna! And as soon as she said the name Krishna, little girls cannot imitate. As soon as she said the name Krishna, all her hair stood on end, her limbs began to tremble, and torrents and torrents and torrents like monsoons were pouring from her eyes in tears, and she fell to the ground, tasting the sweetness again and again of the names. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. When the devotees saw this, they were struck with wonder. This is the power of bhakti. Whether we're a little girl or whether we're a great Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, when we receive the grace of the Lord, all impediments are removed and we can achieve the ultimate perfection. And the son of Narayani is Vrindavan Das Thakur, who was actually a disciple of Nityananda Prabhu, the grand nephew of Srivas Thakur, and it is he who gave us this Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat and described the Mahaprakash Leela. And now we have the great blessing of Srila Prabhupada in the form of the divine association of His Holiness Jaipatak Swami Maharaj. Jaipatak Swami Maharaj is one of the very earliest disciples of Srila Prabhupada. I believe it was in 67 or 68, sometime around then, that he became a devotee in San Francisco. He was just a teenage boy. And as a teenager, he was sent to Montreal. I think he was made the president. He didn't even know anything. But he was so, he just had such enthusiasm to serve and such a sense of responsibility and such dedication and devotion. And shortly after that, he was only a devotee for a very short time. He was a temple president. Then he was sent to India. And a few days later, he became a sannyasi. And Srila Prabhupada was so proud of him. As we said during Prabhupada's disappearance day, when Prabhupada was in Mumbai in 1971, he told the leader of the majority party for Parliament of India, he said, "This boy, Jai Patak, make him an Indian citizen. I need him here in India. He is an eternal associate of Lord Chaitanya." And since that time, Srila Jai Patak Maharaj has been here in Calcutta, in Sri Mayapur Dham, traveling to various parts of India, Bangladesh. Yes, you know, when Jananivas Prabhu and was Pankajangari Prabhus were pujaris in that grass hut, Srila Jai Patak Maharaj was a leading preacher in this whole area. And his incredible dedication to Srila Prabhupada, his deep compassion for all the beings, his unbelievable empowerment to tell stories about Lord Chaitanya, about Krishna. has charmed millions of people all over the world. And you can imagine from those earliest days, you know, in Mayapur Dham and in India when there was really nothing, and he just, his enthusiasm never wavered. And just see what he has done. He has been one of the greatest instruments to develop Mayapur and literally bringing tens and tens of thousands of people to the path of bhakti. And he was traveling around the world. I remember His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj was in some country where nobody goes. He was thinking, "I'm going to this country where nobody else goes." And when he got there, Jai Patak Maharaj was there. And he said, "Srila Jai Patak Maharaj, he cares. He was putting so much of his heart and his life, staying up late at nights, just trying to help these devotees who never get any association with anyone." And he, after a few years ago, when he had this heartbreaking stroke, it happened in Mumbai, and doctors from America came to see him. And one doctor from America told him, who very carefully checked him when he was still in a coma, he said, "This is the most devastating of any type of stroke. Every stroke is devastating, but this is the worst." He said, "There is not even a 1% chance that he can survive. And if he survives, he'll probably be a vegetable and never be able to speak or do anything for the rest of his life." Srila Jai Patak Maharaj came out of that. I'll never forget. I was coming from somewhere into Bombay, and I was in a car going to the airport. And
Srila Jaipatak Swami Maharaj was at Bhaktivedanta Hospital recovering. He was actually recovering. It's quite amazing. Supernaturally, miraculously, Krishna's mercy to the world. And I got on the phone with him, and we were having our Puna Yatra. I think 5,000 people were coming that year. And Pune is about a four-hour drive from Bombay. So I said to Jaipatak Maharaj, I said it jokingly. I said, Maharaj, why don't you come to the Pune Yatra? I just wanted him to feel like we wanted him. He said, oh, Pune Yatra, tell me about it. I said, there'll be about 5,000 devotees there. He said, oh, 5,000 devotees? I said, yes. I thought, you know, he was happy that I invited him. The next thing I know is it comes closer to the Pune Yatra, and the doctors of Bhaktivedanta Hospital were calling me. I said, what have you done? They said, His Holiness Srila Jaipatak Maharaj, every time we see him, he says, I want to go to the Pune Yatra. And we're telling him, Maharaj, you can't. You can't go there. It's 4 to 5 hours driving bumpy roads and you just had a stroke. You know, he hadn't traveled anywhere yet. He just came from one hospital to the other. That was, and he said, it's too dangerous. It's too exhausting. You won't survive. You can't go. And he said, but Radhanath Maharaj invited me. And they didn't know what to do. And the next time they'd see him, he'd say, I want to go to the Pune Yatra. And his servants and assistants were saying, Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, you can't go. He said, but Radhanath Swami invited me. So the director of Bhaktivedanta Hospital, the main doctors of Bhaktivedanta Hospital, some of the main disciples of Jaipatak Maharaj, they all approached me and said, please, take away your invitation. Because he keeps saying, you invited him. So he wants to go, but he can't survive. I said, how can I take away my invitation? He's my senior godbrother. He's worshipable to me. So the main doctor who did the surgery for him or whatever, the main doctor came from another hospital, came to Bhaktivedanta Hospital to check on him. And all our doctors and everybody else around feel, this will settle it. He's the final authority. If he tells him he can't go, then closes the chapter. So Jaipatak Maharaj told the doctor, tell them to let me go to the Pune Yatra. The doctor went off to the side with all the other doctors and said, what is this Pune Yatra? They said, you have to tell him not to go. We've been telling him not to go, but he wants to go. We have to stop him. It's a five-hour drive, and it's very exhausting. There'll be 5,000 devotees there, and then he has to give a lecture, and then he has to come back, and, the ambulance and all these things. It's very... So please tell him not to go. The doctor said, what will cure him the fastest? And now this doctor's not a devotee. All the doctors at Bhaktivedanta Hospital are devotees. They're initiated devotees. They're counselors. They have so many people. They're giving Bhagavad Gita classes and Srimad Bhagavatam classes and cultivating. They're doing yajnas and pujas and everything. And this doctor's not a devotee at all. And the devotees are saying, tell him he can't go. That will be the final. Otherwise, he's harassing us. He wants to go. And the doctor said, what will cure him the most and the fastest is if he's happy. And because he's such a saintly person, what makes him happy is to be compassionate to others. So for him to be able to preach to 5,000 people will make him so happy that will be the best thing for his health.
He came.
He came to the Pune Yatra. He came in this ambulance thing, you know, it was like a van, just a little van, ambulance kind of van, and he, you know, they wheeled him out in his little chariot here, and they... And then it was just a couple months after the stroke. You know, he could hardly, he was talking like this. And he was just talking, and one very nice lady disciple was standing next to him, and she could somehow or other understand everything he was saying. So he would say something, and then she would say it louder in the microphone, and he would say it in the... And he gave a one-hour class. And all the devotees there were weeping and crying in joy. What incredible compassion. And as I was sitting next to him like this when he was giving that class, and I was thinking, you know, he had such dear, intimate association with Srila Prabhupada and so much. And see how Prabhupada has invested this incredible, deep, compassionate spirit and faith in his heart. So let us celebrate our good fortune by welcoming His Holiness Jaipatak Swami Maharaj. He's come all the way from some place in Bangladesh, and for him to travel is very rigorous. He's come all this way just to welcome us to his home in Mayapur and to give us his blessed association. Maharaj, thank you very much. Hare Krishna.